forget the name. I want to say Dunkirk, but no, that would be...
That would be great beer.
It would be really thrilling and exhilarating beer.
And long.
They do have a lot of really good beer in Maryland, though. There's a lot of good stuff there.
Everything I had when I was there, I wasn't there long, but everything I had was good. All right, shall we talk criterions and all that fun stuff? Let's check in with you all first.
I think.
Talk beer, yeah. Beer yeah. Now? We've already talked about what we're drinking. Where can we go from here, Matt? Come on. What we want to drink? Is that the new beers that will come out? So, Jill, I think you said you recorded a new episode with Wade this weekend. Is that right?
We did on Saturday.
So, and anything about that?
Yeah, so we decided to put together... we came up with our own lists of our essential gateway classics. So these would be movies that you would show to the uninitiated movie lover or someone that maybe is averse to black and white. So we each came up with about 10 movies each that we, and with various reasons as to why, making those connections between... those classics and modern to try to lure people into loving these movies. So we did that, and I'm pretty happy with it. And we're going to break it up into two episodes and hopefully get the first half out really soon.
You know, I think that's a great topic. And I think that one of the titles on this list would be a good gateway classic. Just saying.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. It was actually, I had a list of about 30 movies. And that title was on my original list, but then I had to whittle it down. But it's definitely a good one.
Betty Blue.
That's exactly right.
And Matt, what about The Complete? So okay, that was Jill Blake, by the way. I didn't give your last name, but I think people know you by now.
Yeah, I've got a reputation.
And that's Drinking While Talking, of course, the podcast.
That Drinking While right. Talking, yes.
Thank you so much, Matt, for that.
Jill and her devil's purse. So Matt, but the
that's a weird way to refer to Wade, I gotta say.
He would be so flattered, just FYI.
Well, he can listen and revel in it. Matt, what about The Complete? I know you just got finished with short films about, was it Killing
and
Love?
Yeah, we did a short film about Killing with Cole, which was a lot of fun, as expected.
Yeah.
So we're in the middle of literally at the middle point of our journey through the Decalogue. So we've done episode 1 and 2 on one episode, and then 3 and 4, and then we're taking a break from the 2 episodes to do the episode, and then the one that was expanded into a full movie. So the next one we're doing in a couple weeks will be short film about love and episode 6. And we're doing that with David Blakesley. So that'll be a lot of fun. Looking forward to it. Hopefully it will not be 3 hours like our 2009 conversation was. But
Is that a comment on Blakesley? Come on.
I think it's purely a comment on Travis and I and how we need to stop opining as much as we do, but we have fun.
We've all had some long conversations, yeah. They're fun, and I like the momentum you guys have. Good show. So, all right, well, shall we just get right into November 2019 announcements? I'd say unpredictable this month. I kind of made a little snide comment, or not even a comment, but I put together a graphic of everybody's guesses and how wrong they were. A lot of surprises on this list, yeah?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah. Yeah, I put together a likely blue releases list on Letterboxd that is just sort of the strongly rumored or confirmed titles that are coming. And only 2 of these 5 titles were on that list. So the other ones were pretty much... There had been sort of rumblings vaguely about Cold War, but the Amazon connection really made people... balk at that one. So these were pretty big surprises.
Yeah, I'm betting Betty Blue and Now Voyager were the 2.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let's start with the beginning. So November 2nd, we have The Day Trippers, written and directed by Greg Mottola of Adventureland and Superbad fame. So any Greg Mottola fans in the house?
Okay. I mean, fine.
They're okay, yeah.
I don't know this movie at all.
I saw it in theaters. I really like Hope Davis. I was like really into her, especially around this time. She did like Next Stop Wonderland, which I think is a really charming romantic comedy, and The Secret Life of Dentists, which I think is not a really charming movie in any way.
It was okay.
This movie
was like an indie darling.
Yeah, she definitely was. And I think she's a really great actress. This movie is fine. I don't know. I guess it's been 20 years, so I'll give it another shot. But it did seem surprising to me. There were rumors that Adventureland was going to come to Criterion. So I'm wondering if maybe those rumors were actually just assumptions based on the Mottola connection, and that in reality it was this movie all along. But neither one of them would have been on my short list of movies that make sense for Criterion. So... I don't know. I haven't really seen anybody over the moon about this announcement, but maybe I'm just missing them.
I do love Superbad.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's
I will
fun.
Like
yeah.
go out and say yeah, that like in terms too. Of coming of age, this is, it's very much in the, like for me, Dazed and Confused was the high school movie for me. But Superbad is like that next generation of that. So I do love that one a lot. So maybe I need to check Day Trippers out. But, you know, I'm not going to probably do a deep dive into this director's, you know, work.
Yeah, my wife was actually a fan of it. And she just said it's like a staple 90s indie movie. And she was surprised I hadn't seen it because I like 90s indie movies. And I just, it escaped me for some reason. And yeah, I agree. Superbad is good. I wouldn't say it's like, it kind of feels like one of those movies that's pretty good, but really doesn't make sense for Criterion. I'll watch it with an open mind. But the one thing I am really excited about is we have a brand new audio commentary, and I love commentaries. I'm on record. I think that the slowdown is, in my opinion, a poor choice, or at least you don't need it on every title, but I think that maybe once or twice a month is fine. But it has Mottola, editor Anne McCabe, and this dude named Steven Soderbergh, who is really, really good at commentaries. And you know, whether you like his movies or not, the guy loves film, so I like hearing what he has to say. And this is a brand new one, so I'm looking forward to that. And we have new interviews. And by the way, Hope Davis, I looked her up. She's doing a lot of TV, which is... That's kind of unfortunately where indie stars go to die. Unfortunately, I mean not die, but you know,
go to make all their money.
Go to make money. Yes, yeah, she's probably doing just fine. Parker Posey.
I mean, I would say that would be a problem 20 years ago, but now going to TV is definitely a very good choice.
Yeah. So. Now, and we were just talking before we started recording about all these streaming services. And that's one thing I notice is that the TV lineup is just like, I don't see how people have time to watch all the TV that's out today. People don't. I mean, there's so much selection. And then there's a short film by Mottola, again with audio commentary, called The Hatbox. That's from 1985. So I wonder if this was like a passion project that just took 10 years to make, and then he established himself and got a career and was able to make Superbad eventually. So I do like the cover. I don't know, Matt, do you remember from the movie, does this have any significance?
I mean, the whole thing is basically like one crazy day of them in the car trying to like, I think it's like they're trying to find a ex-boyfriend or something. It's been a long time, but yeah, it's definitely like evocative of what happens in the movie. It's kind of got like a Daniel Close feel to it. The covers, so which makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. So. Yeah, it's by they're crediting their artists. They have been for a while. R. Kikuo Johnson, which sounds familiar. So I think R. I don't know if that's a male or a female. So I think R. has done other covers in the past. Next one is, I think, a big surprise. You mentioned, Matt, that you thought there was a chance. This was out of the blue for me. I didn't expect it. So this is on November 19th. We have Cold War by Pawlikowski. Thanks.
I need to know my Polish for complete season. So.
That's right. And I'm sure we'll get some people complaining that it's too teal, what do you think? Bad joke. So, yeah, you mentioned the Amazon connection. So does this open the floodgates to Roma and everything else? I don't know. What do you think, Jill?
I don't know. I think, you know, I know that every, well, I don't know.
Okay, that's a good answer. I don't know. It's a great answer.
I was thinking I might have something smart to say, but I'll just, no.
I wonder, like, I wonder if how much this is, because it's a foreign film, like, I don't know if Amazon bankrolled this movie or they just bought the domestic rights and then maybe they only bought theatrical. Is it genuinely from Amazon is the question, like. I'll be interested to see the liner notes to see if like Amazon is mentioned in them.
I just think it's so tough right now to know because so many, like, they're not sharing their numbers, and so yeah. I think it's hard to predict what they're going to allow to come on physical media, or if they have some length of time that they want this to be exclusive to their services. I don't know. We're just in a very weird area right now on this.
We are.
And yeah.
It hasn't been that long. I think this has been my watch list for maybe 3 months, it feels like.
This was definitely a surprise. I mean, I was very surprised to see that.
Have either of you seen it?
No.
Yeah, I saw it. I actually saw it right when it came on Amazon because I was excited to watch it. I really like Ida a lot. I can tell you exactly when it came on. It came on in March. It's only been
4 or 5
yeah,
months.
Yeah. I mean, it'll come out in November, but even that is a pretty short lead time for a new Criterion film that's not by IFC or Janus. Mm-hmm. It's a stunningly beautiful movie. So it's going to look great on Blu-ray. And I probably would have voted it for it for best cinematography. Beyond that, I think the story is a little cold, no pun intended, sorry. I don't think that there's a like real emotional connection
That's
to these
really
characters and like the motivation behind their kind of, it's like an on again, off again romance movie. The motivation behind their behavior and their interactions with each other is very cryptic and distant, and you know the movie is a story of this person's parents, kind of Pawlikowski's parents, and I get the sense that he didn't like really know how to kind of approach the characters. It feels like he's looking at them from a distance, and so the whole movie is a little not emotionally as affecting as it could be considering the story.
Hmm. You know, I think Ida was a little like that too. You know, beautiful but a little detached, maybe.
Well, he's a real hardcore formalist, so it sometimes can be difficult to overlook his very intentional pacing and shot selection when you're trying to get wrapped up in the story, because the whole time you're thinking I'm watching a movie right now, and I think maybe subsequent viewings would loosen that a little bit, but. For me, the movie, I think, doesn't overcome the distance that you have between yourself and the characters.
Well, it was nominated for 3 Oscars, including director for Powell, and I'm sure the third was cinematography, right? And foreign film, of course.
Yeah, foreign film, cinematography, and director, yeah.
It lost foreign film, right?
To Roma.
Yeah, to Roma. Yeah. Yeah, that was almost unfair. So I'm looking forward to it. I would say that Ida was good. I think my take will be similar to yours, but I'm sure glad I didn't watch it on Amazon. One thing I mentioned on the little instant cast is the streaming doesn't really get the blacks and whites, especially like when they're inky blacks and whites like this. So I think Blu-ray is actually probably the best format for this kind of movie. So
it looked good.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a good looking, it's a really good looking movie. I actually feel the same way about Roma to a certain degree. It's a very technically proficient film that is pretty cold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think so too. And then we have, so I can never say this guy's name. So Jean-Jacques Beignet, that okay?
That sounds good to
French.
Me.
Don't ask me about French.
I don't
speak French.
We so. Ignore that X, I think. If I got it wrong, oh well. So we have Betty Blue. So this is a this one's been talked about. Well, of course, there was the newsletter clue, which was pretty obvious. Although somebody said that they thought it was a double clue about All About Eve, I think it was. And I'm like, no, that was a little bit of a reach. I don't know. Oh, I should also mention that Spy Numbers, out the window. Forget about it. I'm done with Spy Numbers.
Yeah.
Spy 1001, Greg Mottola. I think that was Criterion almost like giving the finger to all the Spy Number projection. And that includes us, I think. But yeah, no significance whatsoever. And that's fine. Let's move on. Betty Blue. So this is the long version. And this is a month I haven't seen a lot of films, except for the big one. Jill, have you seen Betty Blue?
I have not.
No.
So Matt? I'm not much help.
You'll be helped for the next couple of, I suspect.
Yeah, that's why you're here.
I haven't seen this movie. The short version is on the Criterion Channel. And they had the long version on Filmstruck for a brief period, but I just couldn't bring myself to watch it. I do quite like Diva, which is the film of his, which is already technically in the Criterion collection. Shout out to Keith Enright and Michael Hutchins, our Laserdisc buddies.
Oh, really? Oh,
and wow. That is a really good movie that is very... underviewed, in my opinion, and should everybody should check out. And I sure hope they get that back, because it's very difficult to find at the moment and was never released on Blu-ray as far as I know. This movie is seems to have sort of a more mixed reputation, but a lot of that is based on the shorter version.
Yeah, so this is 3 hours, 184 minutes, so I'm actually kind of surprised that they don't have both versions on here, and I wonder if maybe that's just Benet's
preference. I'm sure that's it. Yeah, I'm sure he didn't want them to put it on, which is funny because they're playing the shorter version on the Criterion Channel, so I'm hoping that they switch them out at some point and play the longer version, because it is a full hour shorter.
Boy, you kind of wonder if, like, Chaplin was around, which versions he would choose. Like, which Gold Rush would be... Mm. It'd be probably
that's
the one,
like
the
Lucas
last one.
Situation, yeah, probably, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, but it sounds like, in this case, it's this is probably the preferred version. But it doesn't matter. I guess you can watch the shorter one on the channel, or you can wait for the Blu-ray. I've talked about Beatrice Dahl and how interesting she is as a human being. She was also on the Jarmusch, one of the segments, was that the cab driver one? Night on Earth?
I'm not sure. Is he in that? Is she in that? I'm not sure.
No, she is. Yeah, she's in one of them. She's the very famous. She kind of had that gap tooth thing going on. So if you've seen if you've seen Night on Earth, you know what I'm talking about. But yeah, she's in this. She's notoriously crazy. I've talked about it before. I think like she, in fact, I'm going to look up her Wikipedia, because even her Wikipedia is fantastic. She was a good actress too. And we have a documentary, 60 Minutes, called Blue Notes and Bungalows. And we have a making of, there's a short film by Beignet from 77. And yeah, he isn't doing much at all these days. I think, yeah, he didn't, unlike Hope Davis, he did not get that TV calling. And then there's a French TV interview from 86 with Dahl and Beignet. Let's see. Yeah, she married somebody in prison. I remember she ate something, and yeah, she, yeah, I don't know. Read her Wikipedia. It's very interesting. Oh yeah, she ate a dead man's ear. well, on acid. She's great, and there's a lot more. That's just,
but it was for charity, I'm sure.
If eating a dead man's ear makes it to your Wikipedia, just imagine what else is out there.
Like, that's the tamest, yeah, the tamest thing she did.
I mean, this,
but it was she was on acid. I mean,
this 100% this movie 100% seems like a softcore porn that you'd watch on like Showtime at like 3 a.m. in 1996, right?
Sign me up.
So I don't know enough about this film. So I yeah, maybe so. I don't know. But yeah, Betty Blue, and it's coming out. What do you think of the cover? And it's just Beatrice Dahl.
I think it's pretty cool.
And
looks good.
Yep. Yeah. A lot of pink. All right, let's move on. So there's this actress named Betty Davis. Do we know her?
She's a real, you know, real loser. Yeah, Betty. It's a great fall for Betty Davis movies, just FYI.
And we should mention that Warner Archive has the, was it The Letter? What was it?
We have a pair. So she made three films with William Wyler. And we're getting two of them on Blu-ray. We're getting we might be getting all three. I know we're getting Jezebel on Blu-ray.
Yeah,
hopefully. Jezebel's definitely coming. That's a great one. Yeah.
And we're getting The Letter. And you know what? I feel like we're also getting The Little Foxes. But maybe that's just, you know, a little wish fulfillment on my part. But I feel like that's also coming out.
And that's where some of the DVD, I guess, physical media rights. Man, imagine if those five titles were a box set, a Betty Davis box set.
Oh, my God. Well, there is a set of Betty Davis box sets. There were actually three of them released. I have two of them. Do not even ask me what's in these sets, but it's a lot of her Warner Brothers work, but I believe in those three sets, the movies with Goldwyn were not included. And for the longest time, those movies were out of print. And then several years ago, Warner Archive released The Letter and Jezebel on DVD.
I'm looking it up, and there's a volume one, and it has The Letter and a lot of other films. So
yeah, no Little Foxes Blu-ray yet.
And that one, right. Yeah, okay. Just so DVD. That's total. That was totally me just throwing that out to the cosmos and hoping it'll happen. But
volume
no, that
two
had
Jezebel, Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, and a lot of other Marked Woman.
Yes, yeah. That's right. Okay, and those have been long out of print. But so those are coming out on Warner Archive. So I'm very excited about that. But, these two Criterion movies we're getting, All About Eve and now Voyager, I kind of thought we might get All About Eve at some point, but, now Voyager was completely out of left field, and I'm so excited. Such a great movie.
I've not seen this, and I've mentioned that my film professor said that they use the same template as Casablanca, and he could have been off base. I don't remember, and I'd seen that so many times, and nothing against Casablanca, it's a masterpiece, but I just, you know, I don't know if I want to watch Casablanca again. So is that a fair comparison, Jill?
No,
it's before Casablanca, isn't it?
I think it's after, isn't it?
It's 42, so.
42. You know. Casablanca was 41, wasn't it?
No, it was 43, isn't it?
Okay, all right. So I had a really bad film teacher.
No, they're both 42, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know which one came out before the other.
I mean, in terms of like...
I mean, they have Paul Henri and Claude Rains in them.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's about, and like you kind of have a little bit of a star-crossed lover aspect, but like it's not at all the same.
You know, and just Claude Rains is just fantastic. We talked about him on Notorious.
And he was like that supporting player that could come in and just instantly class up the movie in like 5 seconds.
He would destroy in the most subtle way possible.
and he's a total scene stealer too. And he can just stand there and his little short self and completely command the screen. Now Voyager is, you know, definitely would be classified as your, you know, 3 to 7 hanky woman's picture.
Right.
But it's so beautifully done. Irving Rapper is very, I hate to use the word underrated because I think we've lost the meaning of what underrated means. But in this case, Irving Rapper, massively, massively underrated director. He did the movie One Foot in Heaven in 1941, which is great. Now Voyager, Corn is Green, Rhapsody in Blue, Anna LaCosta. So, I mean, a lot of his filmography as a director, it's not, I would say Now Voyager is certainly his best film. And I wouldn't say that it's not like, you know, top shelf films on all of them, but he knew how to make a movie. And so I'm really, really, really excited for this to get the Criterion treatment. It's going to be beautiful.
And how about that cover? I really think,
oh my God,
that might be the cover. I mean, really between the two. So yeah, both Bette Davis films are coming out on November 26th. So happy Thanksgiving, everybody. And yeah, so the features, and we have some friends here. So, well, there's Dick Cavett, who, it seems like we get some Dick Cavett every month.
They must have bought up the whole library. I've met Dick Cavett.
He's very, very nice.
I'm sure he is, but that's cool that you've met him. No, I'm sure he's very, very jovial.
Yeah.
His show is good.
Very nice. Yeah. Yeah.
And then we have a Paul Henry interview from 1980. And then here's where our friends come in. We have a selected scene commentary on the score by Professor Jeff Smith from Madison, Wisconsin. So he's a friend of the show. And I'll take a selected scene commentary over, you know, nothing. And then we have our buddy Farron, self-styled siren. Is that right?
That's right.
So interview with her. I always enjoy her. I just saw her in something recently. I mean, she's all over the collection. She's the best.
Yeah, she's actually got a feature right now on the Criterion Channel on Borzaghi, I think.
Oh, cool. Wow, I missed that.
Yeah, she's all over that thing.
Yeah, Farron is good people.
Yeah, she always has really insightful things to say.
And then we have a new interview with costume historian Larry McQueen, and we have radio adaptations. I still can't get into those. I'm sorry. Am I the only one here?
Oh, they're great. Okay. They're fun.
Well, you know, I think if I could take them with me, and I'm sure there's some sort of way to rip a audio track and put it on your iPhone or whatever.
Most of these are probably available online. There's a couple websites that have old-time radio shows, and a lot of these are available. So, you know, just give a little search on those. But I'll put them in the car and listen to it. They're fun.
Yeah. They're probably open public domain, I would guess. I don't know if people are holding on to the rights.
Yeah, I'm not advocating piracy, kids, but yeah. No, I think stay away from the dark web. Yeah, I think there are a lot that are still public domain.
Matt, what do you think of Now Voyager?
It's great. This is one that I haven't seen in a really long time. I love it. I was raised on Bette Davis. She's probably my mom's favorite actress of all time. So I watched a lot of Bette Davis movies growing
That's
up.
That's awesome.
These two movies are the first Bette Davis movies in the Criterion collection. So,
isn't that bonkers?
It took a while, but they. Yeah. Are releasing on the same day what I would argue are the two best Bette Davis movies, at least of the ones that I have seen. The other two that that Jill mentioned are being released are probably in the running, but I think Jezebel exists solely as a Bette Davis vehicle. That's what makes it shine. She just crushes that. In that movie.
She does,
and
yeah.
Whereas I think these two films, she's great and she sort of owns both of them, but they are spectacular movies that I think really make, you know, build her up, build a world around her that is as compelling as she is. And so, yeah, I mean, they, I think that this was a very conscious thing where they were like, well, you know, we don't have any Bette Davis in the collection. We gotta come correct with this. And they definitely
yeah,
did.
This, I mean, they couldn't have picked better. I mean, my favorite, I mean, I like Bette and Wyler together. That for me, that trio of films just works because he, you know, she, like all great actors, could ham it up a little bit. And I think he really kind of toned her down, and maybe the affair they were having might have had something to do with it. But The Letter has always been my favorite performance. But now Voyager is right behind it. So this is, I think, her at her best.
Yeah, and I like the characterization of Jezebel as being, so I think All About Eve is a little bit in that direction as well. So let's get to the final, or the final title of the month. So Joseph Mankiewicz, one of the greats, directing Bette Davis, and I love the cover here. Just, you know, it's almost cliche, but the Bette Davis eyes really, really shine in this cover.
Greg Ruth. He made a deal with the devil. That's all I can say. There's no other way that you can do drawings like that.
And I should mention the other artist for the other one was Sam Hadley, I believe it was. So yeah, Greg Ruth. So he also did Notorious, Jill. So he's does some really good work. And in fact, we were just talking about it last week. He did some process prints for Notorious. I'd love to see what he does for this, if there's some other scenes, or if there's, you know, inside the booklet scenes. But yeah, this is a first day. Now I know All About Eve has been out before, and sometimes that's a gripe from people. They're like, put something out that hasn't been released. But I'm totally fine with it. In fact, I have one in the other room, and I'll
yeah.
I'll... So guess what? We have more Dick Cavett on this disc from 1969 to 1980. That guy worked. I'll give him that. And probably one thing I love more than commentaries is director documentaries. So we have one about Mankiewicz from 1983, so a little older, but it's called All About Mankiewicz.
And I've seen it. It's very good.
Oh, good, good. And I'm trying to recall Mankiewicz's films, but I love A Letter to Two Wives.
There's three. Sure, don't knock out that third wife, Aaron.
Yeah, there's a third wife.
Oh, okay. Oh, sorry.
Those two movies were made...
I thought you meant a third film.
Those two movies were made in consecutive years. He's the only director ever to win both writing and directing Oscars in consecutive years. He won for both of these movies.
Fun trivia there, fellas. We have two audio commentaries. So we have one with Celeste Holm, Mankiewicz's son Christopher Mankiewicz, and author Kenneth Geist, and then the other one with Sam Staggs. So we know Sam, kind of. He's done a lot of work. And we have a new interview with costume historian Larry McQueen, Hollywood Backstories, All About Eve 2001 documentary, and then plenty more about Mankiewicz, and then a radio adaptation, Jill, so there you go. And yes, an amazing cover from Greg Ruth. So on a scale of 1 to 20, how great is this release? I think this is one of the best releases of the fall. Do we agree?
Yeah, definitely.
Yes.
Although there's one that I'm more excited about, but this one's
yeah, I mean, I would say the thing is, like you said, I do have the previous All About Eve Blu-ray. I'm sure this 4K restoration is going to be better, and there are some additional extras here, but there's also extras missing from that disc, so it's kind of like a half and half.
Yes.
But both of these commentaries are on that disc as well.
Yeah, so and in fact, I have a steelbook in the other room. You know, back when I thought steelbooks were worth collecting, that I has yet to be opened. But of course, I've seen the film, and yeah, this is a, you know, as far as a star vehicle, and yeah, I would say Jezebel is a good comparison. But yeah, Bette Davis is pretty awesome in this. Of course, so is Anne Baxter. Don't want to take away from her.
I will. Yeah. I do want to say about the cover. Not only does it have that iconic side eye, like resting bitch face that we all know from this movie, I absolutely love that it's monotone, and I love that because it's got to be one of the greatest black and white cinematography ever done. But I do love that they have the four leads listed on the cover.
I agree. Yeah.
Absolutely love that. It just plays into it's like you're getting a playbill. So I love that they put the four leads on the cover. You don't see that very
George
often.
Sanders is so good in this movie.
Oh my God.
I can't wait to watch it again. This is one of those movies that has, you know, total rewatchability.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about scenes. I mean, everyone in this movie, from Betty to, you know, Anne Baxter and George Sanders, Celeste Holm, and then you've got Thelma Ritter, bless her. I mean, everyone in this movie is just stealing from one another. I mean, it's just a great, 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 great movie. And then you also have Betty's husband. At the time, Gary Merrill is in this. He plays Bill Sampson, and that's a fun little interaction between the
Marilyn
two of them.
Monroe.
And then, of course, you've got Marilyn Monroe. Yeah. So it's
there you go. Wow.
It's just a really fun movie. Love it.
And I just think, especially classic Hollywood, it's so good when it's taken the piss out of itself. And I think this is one of many examples. So yeah, this is a pretty fantastic month. I really think that the Bette Davis duo is, for me, when I saw the releases, that's what jumped out at me. I was like, wow, that was pretty impressive. You know, forget
Same
about
here.
Spine. You know, we've talked about Orson Welles or, you know, other possibilities. A Bette Davis twofer was not expected, but it was fantastic. So
this is also another Best Picture winner to add to the collection as well.
Yeah, this and Tom Jones.
Hey, I love that
movie.
Oh,
my God.
I'll give it another shot.
No, you won't, Aaron.
It's in the other room. You're right,
Come on.
The Academy was not always right. I'm just going to leave it there.
I'm not saying it deserved the Oscar, but I am saying I love that movie. If you went into it thinking, oh, this was the Academy Award winner, I could see where you'd be disappointed.
I also would have voted for Sunset Boulevard over All About Eve. So,
it's a very close call. That's a tough year.
But let me ask you this: do you think Judy Holliday was right to win for Born Yesterday?
Well, no, but at the same time, that is a really spectacular performance. It's a very close, again,
it's
a very
so
close
good.
Call. And you know what? I think as much as I say that I wouldn't have voted for her, I wish that more performances like that were recognized today, in my lifetime.
I'll take it.
That type of a performance is not appreciated the way that it once was.
Right. Yeah, the consensus, in all of the classic film world is that, you know, Gloria was robbed, which, I mean, I think, if you could give two awards that year, I mean, that would have been a perfect year for a tie, I think. Mm-hmm. But so I'm like, I see those pictures of poor Gloria, you know, when she didn't win. It's so tragic. But then I love the fact that Judy won for a comedic performance because it's her best. So
yeah. And if you read about Gloria, I don't want to get too far into Sunset Boulevard, but the later stage of her career and how she wasn't as old as the character was, and then what she did after. I mean, just fascinating story. But yeah, I think she was robbed personally. In fact, I think I would go with Bette Davis as third too, but I don't have the list in front of me. So that's pretty good month. I don't know. Should we even rate the month? Does it rate?
It's a yeah. solid, not spectacular month, but I mean that it's hard to argue with two Bette Davis movies and these yeah. Bette Davis movies. So that's good enough for me. I mean, these.
I think it makes up for the rest being kind of. Right.
Yeah,
I think that's fair. Yeah, stuff we'll watch. You know, we have a recent film that that a lot of us have been waiting to get around to, and then we have 3-hour Betty Blue, so that
softcore porn.
Where's the special feature about her dropping acid and eating in the ear, though? That come on, missed opportunity criterion. All right, well, we've had a pretty good month right now, and so we have, in fact, today I received Magnificent Obsession with a blind Jane Wyman, who's I love blind Jane Wyman, by the way. I get it. And then the Coker trilogy is coming out next week, along with Flavor of Green Tea Over Rice.
What?
Which, Matt,
you that's coming out? I had no idea.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's a great movie. Everybody should buy it. It's really good.
Yeah, Jill, have you gone down the Ozu train?
Not yet.
Okay, well, that's something to... But comparing it to classic Hollywood is, like, completely...
No, it's not, Aaron. That's the beauty of Ozu, everybody.
It's
he
not?
He loved okay. classic right. Hollywood. And classic Hollywood loved
I'm
him.
I'm not saying he
and
did.
And actually, if you were going to pick out a movie that... If you were going to pick out a movie that that would be a good fit for, like, classic Hollywood... lovers, I think okay. Flavor of Green Tea Over Rice is a very good pick. There's a lot of sort of the catty, witty banter in it. There's, you know, it's a very moving love story about a married couple that have drifted apart. There's even like almost for me as an Ozu fan, to my detriment, a little bit of the kind of clever twists of Hollywood screenwriting in it. It's a very likable and easy watch, and everybody should watch it. And it's got a free movie on it, so go out and buy some Ozu.
It does
everybody.
Have a free. It's a buy. It's a yeah. twofer. Jill, speaking of gateway movies, go get well, not wrong order. Go watch Late Spring, then get drunk and talk to Wade about it.
Yeah, I will do that.
Would you
I
say
mean,
that's
I,
the gateway.
No,
Ozu?
I have not. I haven't avoided Ozu like I've avoided Bergman. It's just one of those things. I just haven't gotten around to it. So
yeah, it's fair. It's fair.
They didn't touch on it in film when I took my film classes, but it's on my list. One day.
What do we think about Magnificent Obsession? So I mean, it's overdose of melodrama. I think like it's even for Cirque, right?
Yeah, I love it.
It's preachy, but like in a very endearing way. Like it's so overly earnest in its yeah. in its sort of didacticism, yeah. And I don't know, that's kind of what I go to Cirque for, so it works for me. I mean, I don't like it's not as sort of woozy as All That Heaven Allows or Written on yeah. the Wind. So that's kind of the thing, the type of Cirque that really gets me going. But this is a really good movie, and it's beautiful, so it'll look. I mean, the DVD was also in pretty good shape, so this will look great.
Yeah, I almost see this as like campy Cirque. Not that the other, they're all melodramas, but it seems like especially All That Heaven Allows has a few layers that you can dig into, and maybe this does too. Maybe I've only seen it once, so
I would definitely say this is probably. I mean, I actually have a real like I get. Very defensive of melodrama
yeah. Okay.
because I enjoy it so much, and so this I would say that this has more I don't want to say campy, but maybe a little more over the top than mm-hmm. some of Cirque's other output. But it's so, you know what Matt was saying, it's so earnest, and I think, and it's very pretty faithful to the novel by Lloyd Douglas, C. Douglas, and so I mean, when you're dealing with cheesy, you know, a cheesy original story to begin with, like you know, mm-hmm. so I mean, it's but to me, this with All That Heaven Allows is like a perfect twofer of just wreck your emotional life. Yeah. It's so good. And they're so beautiful. Rock is so fucking beautiful in this. Like, my God. You know.
I know.
Anyways, I'm excited.
If only Jane Wyman was not blind. But she could feel his face. So, I'm not knocking melodrama or Circa at all.
I think this is probably less melodramatic than Written on the Wind. I mean, there's some pretty wild stuff in Written on the Wind. This is more it's that like whole philosophy behind it, I think, where it becomes very overly serious, but in like an endearing way.
Right. And the thing is with, I mean, how believable is the whole plot line to begin with? You know, it's just like Random Harvest, you know, where you have this amnesia storyline and, you know, to me, you know what you're signing up for and you just have to give in to it. And I think if you acknowledge that it's just another, of course it's not realistic. It's just another form of storytelling. And if you shut off that analytical portion of your brain and just say, I'm going to let this wash over me, it's such a beautiful movie. Just don't think, feel. So,
and this is another twofer as well, because the original film is on here, or the original adaptation.
Oh, right.
Yes. I'm so excited about this release.
I forget about Imitation of Life as well. He remade so, in his own flavor. And so we have the Criterion Channel announcements went up right before we started recording. So this is for September. And I've kind of just dug in a little bit. There's a lot of the stuff that was licensed to Kino, a lot of Melville. And then we have Darling, speaking of Oscar winners, for Julie Christie. And
that's a good movie.
And then we have Grand Illusion. Darling is a good movie.
And a Laserdisc Mitchell as well.
Oh, right. That's right. Another Criterion, we have Latrue.
That's a great movie.
Fantastic movie. I can't say enough about the Melvilles. What do we have for classic? We have Of Mice and Men.
There's a Gloria Swanson in it.
Yeah.
There is. One? Perfect Understanding.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
And I don't know if I've seen that one either.
Yeah, Pre-Code.
Oh, no, I have seen that one. It's good. Yeah, it's good.
We have an Alan Bates, so A Kind of Loving. Let's see. We have 35 Shots of Rum. So great. That's
Claire Denis' Ozu movie.
Claire, oh, there you go. All right.
And I think everybody needs to check out Stylag 17.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Wonderful. Yeah. And Wuthering Heights, which is William Wyler, Merle Oberon, Laurence Olivier. That's a great, great
and
adaptation.
Marathon Man, especially if you had dental work that day.
No.
I don't know Barbara. What's
that's
that?
The Christian. Petzl. Yeah, the one he made before Phoenix.
So nice lineup. So
How about Upstream Color on here? That's kind of out of left field.
Oh yeah, that is interesting. Yeah, that is left field. Could you see a release maybe of this or Prime?
I mean, I'm trying to figure out what collection that would be in. I mean, maybe like with Marathon Man and like weird sci-fi or something. Like, I don't even know what other movies that would be connected.
And we
to.
Don't know what the programming is on this. They've just announced the films, correct?
Just the films, right? They kind of just dumped the films. So obviously there'll be a Melville program at some point because there's 80 films by him. I'm sure.
I definitely love Primer. Primer on Blue. I mean, it's not out yet, so I don't even know if it can be on Blue. Was shot on film, wasn't it?
But very, very expensive.
One-to-one shooting
it's
ratio.
Almost like it wouldn't make a difference. That's one example where it would. Maybe they'd pair it with La Jetée or something.
Yeah.
It could work. So I don't want to belabor this too much, but we had Teal Ray is back. So John Waters' Polyester apparently has a little bit of teal on it. Any reactions?
I love Teal's deep breath. Serenity now, Jill.
So you guys had to. So I saw the post and my eyes rolled out of my head. But you guys were talking about Teal Ray, and I didn't know who Teal Ray was. And you guys.
It's related to Aldo.
Yeah. You guys gave me the skinny on Teal Ray, and you know, here's the deal. First of all, I wonder if the people complaining about, first of all, they don't even have the, well, I guess the disc, some people have it now, don't they? Or has it come out yet? No, it hasn't come out yet.
Yeah, check the check discs. Some reviewers, review copies have gone out.
Some reviewers, right. But still, you know, it's not out yet. And so they're basing this, their outrage is based on a couple screen caps. But, you know, I have to wonder if they've seen the movie, because right now I own a VHS and a DVD copy, and they're both terrible. Also, I have to wonder if they would look John Waters in the eye and make those same complaints to him, since he was part of this release. He signed off on it. So
John Waters would shred them.
John Waters would have some choice words.
I want to see John Waters people in a teal suit having some choice words for these people.
I think the teal thing has been overblown. And if you listen to the podcast on about with Lee Klein talking about it, I was glad that he addressed it. And it's the director's choice, and he could easily change it and wash it out to look like those old VHSs and the original DVD Blu-rays. But these are what the directors want, and so maybe that's just a thing that was going through 80s and 90s Hollywood that they wanted more teal.
I think, you know, we had talked about this a little bit before we recorded, that, you know, probably what we have seen have been bad copies on broadcast on TV, or like I said, lousy transfers on DVD, mm-hmm. VHS. And so that is the version that everyone thinks is the original. And so I think we have to trust in, well, first of all, that's just dumb nitpicking. So just cut it out. just stop it. That's stupid. And if you are getting that caught up in that stupidity, just call it a day. I don't want you in the Cinephile Club anymore, because you're not enjoying it. You know, this is exactly. So stupid. But I think that we have to trust that the filmmakers themselves and a company like Criterion, who has made some mistakes, but they've been pretty good about owning up to when they do make them. Mm-hmm. I would say that most of these niche home video distributors act in good faith. And so I think we have to trust that they are giving us the best possible that they can. And, you know, unless, you know, we all grew up in the era of pan and scan movies. And when you would go and buy your VHS or whatever, and that thing would just be chopped all the hell.
I would watch it on my 13-inch TV VCR combo.
Of course. Of course you did. We all did. And it was still amazing, right? To me, that's the only crime here is, you know, wrong aspect ratio and pan and scan. But if they are doing their best to restore the movie, you know, to what the director or the cinematographer, what they envisioned, I think we have to put our trust in that. And some of the big studio releases, you know, you can tell they put it out for a quick buck.
Oh, sure.
So I'm not going to be like, trust all corporations. But I think that all of these, smaller distributors, I think they're doing their best.
Well, if there's one thing you want to give credit to,
like we are,
Criterion for, is that they've been respectful and, if anything, deferential to the artist's vision.
Yeah.
So
100%.
And that's a good thing. Whether it's right or wrong. So there, before we start recording, there was a regurgitation of the Last Emperor discussion about the aspect ratio, and how and because that was a controversy about 10 years ago that they had the wrong aspect ratio, and that was a big deal to people. But that was the way they envisioned it. But the studio cut it to a different one than they envisioned. And you know what? So maybe that's not what you saw in the theaters when you're a kid, but that's the way the artist wanted it. And so that's why they did that. So yeah, if you want to buy an old DVD of something, or if you want to buy a pan and scan of Speed and enjoy it, go to town. But yeah, no, it's no. And some of the complaints when the stills come out, remember True Stories, Matt?
Yeah.
They complained about a still shot that it just happened to have a blue set piece. And they said it was too teal, but it was because it was an actual teal couch.
Yeah, well, and as I mentioned in the discussion before we started recording, somebody was comparing a screenshot on Criterion's website to a YouTube rip of the trailer for the movie.
Because I just need to stop. I mean, that is just so stupid. I'm just going to say it.
And even it, let's assume it's right, like, the difference in terms of like a blue phone being turned slightly green is that's not Han shoots first. Just get over yourself.
It's not a crime.
Like it's the same.
No. Movie. Yeah. They're not altering the plot line. Yeah. Here. That's ridiculous. That's just a ridiculous thing to get upset over. Yeah.
And when they say that there's a teal hue, I think they said something about this, about Mulholland Drive, about it. Maybe it's color graded a little bit in that direction, director's approval or not, but you can't tell in full motion. These transfers look fantastic, and each one of them that had complaints, I enjoyed them thoroughly. So yeah, I'm not going to join, as I think it was Martin called them, pixel pushers. So they were just harping on each pixel, and
I'm sorry, some like Joe Blow who thinks he has the best audiovisual equipment in the I'm sorry no
they have a nice keyboard, I'll say that.
Well, they sure do in their mom's basement. So anyways, I think that's just very, very dumb. And if you're getting to that point, then you need to reevaluate your life, because obviously you don't love movies enough. I just said it. And I'm going to hold by it.
Forget about these weird colors. Enjoy the movies. And on that note, so it was actually kind of a slow news week because I just recorded with Robert. But it was a good thing because we were allowed to rant on Teal for a little bit. So just really briefly, short takes are just movies from the Criterion Channel that we've seen lately. So Jill, have you seen anything?
I have. It's not a new release, but I actually just picked it up in the last Criterion sale at Barnes & Noble, the Some Like It Hot release, which I have on like 5 other DVD and Blu-rays. But I picked that up and watched it with my daughter. She has seen it before. I actually took her to one of those TCM Fathom events at the movie theater, which I kind of have mixed feelings about. I think they're great, but I think sometimes the presentation in the individual theaters are not so great. But anyways, that was about 2 years ago. I took her to that and, she asked to watch it. And so we, sat down, and this is the first time that she, laughed a lot. So, obviously a lot of jokes were going over her head 'cause she's 8, but, but I do love that as she gets older and as she continues to, watch this movie, it's a favorite in this house, so I know she'll see it again, that more and more of those layers will reveal themselves to her and she will get more of those jokes. But, the transfer is so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually a little hesitant to pick it up just because I owned so many copies of it. But I'm very, very glad that I snagged that edition, because I don't think it's ever looked better. And I've seen it on pristine 35. you know, I've seen it in the theater many times, but that's a great addition to the collection. Absolutely love it.
Yeah, that's one that every time I rewatch it, I think, you know what, I've seen it so many times, but it always charms me every time when you know, Jack Lemmon starts dancing, and it's just like, you got me.
Yeah, and each time I've probably seen this movie 20, 25 times, and every time I see it, I see something new, or there's a new joke I pick up on, and that's just the brilliance of Billy Wilder and I.A.L. Diamond's script and the performances. It's just a fun movie.
Charles Brackett gets a lot of credit, but Diamond was a pretty crack writer too. So
Diamond was great, and I am acquaintances with his son Paul. And nice dude. And but yeah, Brackett gets all the credit, but Diamond worked with Wilder in the back half of his career and was responsible for The Apartment and Some Like It Hot and
1, 2, 3.
1, 2, 3, Irma La Douce, Kiss Me Stupid, Avanti. So
good stuff, yeah.
Yeah, very good.
And different. You know, you can see the difference between the later stuff and the,
absolutely,
and the Brackett stuff. So Matt, any movie or movies you watched lately?
So it only took me a year and a half, but I finished the Olympics box set. I watched 54, 53 movies, 100 hours of Olympics.
Sum it up in 30 seconds.
It's a roller coaster of emotion. the silent movies are astonishing. The restorations are incredible, and it's just so wild to watch 7 hours of Olympics footage from 1912 that looks like it was made yesterday. It's just outrageously impressive. And then I had to watch Olympia, which was not fun. And then I had to watch about 15 to 20 years of just awfully sexist and racist material that was just such a grind to get through. And it took me probably, you know, almost a year just to watch those movies. And then I got to Tokyo Olympiad, which is my pick for the best film in the set. And everything after that is just, with the exception of a couple of films, is just a complete joy to watch. And they are, you know, from that film to the Greenspan film in the early 80s, it's a real artistic height for documentary filmmaking. The advances, both technologically and stylistically, that were made, and those went hand in hand, of course, are just so impressive to watch develop. And there's some really remarkable filmmaking with great variety in those movies. And then the Greenspan films, while not, I mean, the first one is extraordinary, and everybody should watch it. It's the 84 Olympics.
Oh, yeah, 16 Days of Glory.
And the subsequent movies have some, their ups and downs, you know, not all of them are perfect, but they are all extremely watchable. Mm-hmm. The Beijing film has some really remarkable stuff. The last movie is garbage, but... That being said,
tell us how you really feel.
That being said, I really miss the set now. I don't know if it was Stockholm syndrome, but I want to keep watching these movies, and I hope that they do another 100 years of Olympic films in 94 years. So
maybe what they'll do is every couple years they'll release the
supplemental
film version of the prior
Olympics. They should put out one with like Velcro that you can attach to the box.
They're just heads would explode. Every Criterion collector would be like, oh my god.
I just want to make a case for this set for people who are not sports fans though, because this is 100 years of world history. If you're a history buff, it's 100 years of documentary filmmaking, and I know everybody listening to this is a film fan. It's 100 years of fashion, which is super awesome to watch develop over the course of these films. You get to see a whole lot of sexism, which is always a lot of fun.
Yeah, good time.
It was there. You should know about it.
It still is.
Yeah, it is. It's just not as much in the Olympic films.
And
you get to see these people's lives. I mean, the flip side of the sexism is that you get to see these female athletes for the first 50 to 60 years of these movies, where you know that their entire life they were fighting against the fact that they shouldn't be doing this, and they did it anyway, and it's so inspiring and beautiful to watch. And
that's great.
I hated when this set came out how many people said that they would never watch it because sports are stupid. And I used to watch sports a whole lot. Now I have kids and it's hard to be like, honey, I'm going to go watch a football game for 4 hours. So I don't watch sports as much as I used to. I also just prefer to hang out with my kids. But you know what? There's a lot to this that is not just, who hits the ball the farthest or has the biggest muscles. So please check out a few of these movies on the Criterion Channel if you aren't ready to spring for the whole box. And it's an extraordinary journey that I'm really glad I took.
Yeah, and the stories transcend the actual sports. I think that's what people don't and some people don't like human interest stories, but these show the grit and what it takes to get there. So they're all fascinating. And I think the Greenspan films really highlighted a lot of those, and they had some diminishing returns, but yeah, really good stuff. All right, well, mine, it's tough to follow that, but it's not every day I get to go see a Criterion in the theater before it's released, so especially here in my podunk town of Columbia, South Carolina. But our local theater showed Where's the Friend's House by Kiarostami. Mm-hmm. So this is the first of the Coker trilogy. And we had a film scholar from, she was actually Turkish, but she specializes in Middle Eastern and, of course, a lot of Iranian film. And she gave a speech or a little talk back after the film, which was really, really interesting. I'd seen the film before, and I highly recommend it. You know, it's short. It's pretty linear for Kiarostami. But it's also very watchable. It's very funny, actually. I was surprised by how many people laughed at certain points. One thing that she said that struck me, and I didn't really think about this, not just in terms of Kiarostami, but in terms of Iranian cinema, is you don't see a lot of females in the cast. And we know about how females are treated there and portrayed there, but I didn't think about the fact that the issues with the males are not supposed to see females as any sort of object. And that extends not only to the viewer, but also to the director and also to the editor. So it's very, very difficult to film a female that's not on an exterior. And so you watch, this will probably show up in the Coker trilogy as you watch it. You won't see many interiors with females. So that was an interesting aspect, and there are plenty more. Really looking forward to the set. I think it's going to be special when it comes out. I think it's next week, right?
Yeah, I think it must be, because, it's an August title. So.
There you go. Processable.
That's image. A great movie. I love it. It just puts a smile on my face, really.
Same here. And I haven't seen the other two, but knowing how much I love this and knowing where they go with the material, so they kind of give the close-up treatment, if you've seen that, sort of the pseudo-documentary kind of thing. So I can't wait to check this trilogy out. So, yeah. Are you a Kiarostami fan, Jill?
What?
Yeah.
Okay. I haven't gone down that path. My world cinema is sorely lacking.
That's fair.
But man, if you're talking about Busby Berkeley musicals, I'm like right there.
We talk about them. We talk about all this stuff.
Yeah.
So. What's the gateway Kiarostami, Matt? Would you say this?
Oh, well, I mean, this isn't, you know, going to get you the full Kiarostami effect. Yeah, I guess it depends on how accessible you want to go.
Maybe taste a cherry.
Yeah, taste a cherry.
Or maybe close up.
The wind will carry us, maybe.
I'd say close up gets you more his
thing. I mean, that.
Okay. And it's pretty watchable.
Yeah, his recent films, I think, are also spectacular. Things like Certified Copy and like Someone in Love. Certified Copy, I think, is pretty accessible if you're into the kind of.
That one's on my shelf. I just haven't opened it yet.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. We made it a one that came up actually in that to actually portray a woman. He made a movie in France, and that was
He refused to have female characters because he was so interested in the domestic setting, and you're not allowed to show women without their headscarves in films, and that's how women are in their. In the house, and so he didn't want to portray sense of reality.
That was exactly it. Right? How do you reconcile? And there was more to it than that, but it was that, and also the just the director viewing the woman and fixating on them. So in exteriors, it was
And he went full on with that in Sheeran, which is a movie where he's literally just filming women's faces as they watch a movie.
Okay, I haven't seen that. So that must have been quite, to him, an indulgence. All right, well, that's it. But we have the fun piece of flair. So anything not Criterion you want to talk about, Jill, that you've enjoyed lately?
Yeah, well, so this is not something I have enjoyed, but something I will enjoy on Thursday, September 5th, and I'm doing this little shout out. This is very local, as in it's happening in Atlanta, but I'm sure you have listeners in the area. My friend Millie DeChirico, who is a programmer at TCM, and she is the brains behind TCM Underground. We have a rental store, movie rental store here in Atlanta called Videodrome. They are still kicking.
Long live the new flesh.
They have a programming, usually a monthly programming slate with the Plaza Theater, which is a little neighborhood theater that's been around since 1939 and went through, some rough times. There was a XXX theater in the 70s, and, you know, it's got a great history. But anyways, the Plaza Theater is still... also kicking. And so Plaza and Videodrome do these, I would say, kind of cult screenings. And so for this iteration of Plaza Videodrome Presents, TCM Underground is also sponsoring a screening of Hard Ticket to Hawaii from 1987, a little softcore action crime, God knows what. And Millie is going to be there. She's coming in from LA to introduce the movie. But that's not it. They are partnering with Warner Archive. They're having a contest for people to show up in their sleaziest 80s Hawaii vacation busty bodycon dresses, and they are also filming a new spot for TCM Underground, so that's gonna be a whole lot of fun. So I just had to like put a plug out for that. I'm gonna be there with bells on, very excited.
I actually have a Fathom shout out.
I knew you did, and I was like, this is the first show we had two Fathom events shout outs, so go to town.
I got to see a week ago, I got to see Millennium Actress in theaters. It was playing, they actually are playing it as we speak in the new dub, English dub that they recorded. I think there has never been an English dub, so I think this is the first one. But I got to see it in the subtitled version, and it's one of my favorite animated films. It's my favorite Satoshi Kon film, and it's been extremely hard to see on DVD or Blu-ray in the US. It's never been on Blu-ray in the US. Only available on a non-anamorphic DVD that's been out of print for a really long time. So I was extremely excited to see it on the big screen. It was even more beautiful than I had gotten the impression from the tiny window box that I viewed it through the last couple times I saw it. And it's also coming to Blu-ray on Shout soon. So
Yeah, that's
I
great.
am so excited for more people to see this movie. I know Perfect Blue just got a great Blu-ray release in the US that people are getting turned on to that film. I think the that Perfect Blue and Paprika, which are the kind of widely available Satoshi Kon features that are out there, are definitely more problematic films to wrestle with. I think, you know, what he does with them is admirable. It's not his intention that is problematic, but they are difficult movies when it comes to their gender dynamics. Millennium Actress is just a pure joy to watch. It's a tribute to Japanese film, to the process of loving film, of working in film, and ultimately the joy that you can get out of life and the experience of loving and doing work for love. So it's a marvelous movie, and I really hope everybody checks it out when it is eventually widely available. I'm really excited.
Yeah, it's special. And so, Jill, I would recommend seeing a couple ozu before you check that out. So, because that's kind of,
Okay.
you need that context. It's about well, Setsuko Hara, who you probably seen her in some, she was in some Kurosawa too, right? And Takamine, and she was in a lot of Narusei. I think she was in some others. She was in 24 Eyes. What else was she in? Lots of stuff.
Yeah, she's been in a lot of other stuff. I mean, it's loosely based on Hara, but it's really more about just Japanese. It's she's used as a vehicle to talk
Yeah.
about Japanese film history in general. And yeah, I mean, it's definitely got a lot of that in it. And the more you know about Japanese film history, the more you'll appreciate the sort certain references. There's a pretty clear Throne of Blood reference and things like that, but ultimately it's more about just movie making in general and life. And Khan's work is ha always has that really fascinating meta quality to it that I think is reaches its pinnacle here.
It is special, and I saw it before I'd seen an ozu film, and I still loved it. So now I think it, and I actually haven't seen it. It's stuck with me. So that's and that was when it came out in 2001. Mine is so I haven't seen a whole lot because I had a little travel. But mine is Empire of Dreams. So this is a Star Wars documentary that showed up on Amazon Prime, and I think goes a little ways back. I think it was maybe 2005, 2004, probably about the time when they were putting out all these special editions. And well, that was actually at the height of the prequels. So yeah, great time for Star Wars. It was watchable and interesting and entertaining. If you're a Star Wars fan, or even if you've been alive, I think you'd find some enjoyment out of it. But it has a lot of George Lucas. And I have mixed feelings about George Lucas. I think the first trilogy is good, and it has its highs and lows. But like I said, mixed feelings. And what's funny is he talks about how bold he was to remain independent and not take money from studios, so that he could not cave into studio pressure. And just sure. A few years have passed since that interview, but still, even then, that was when he was redoing his old independent features with really bad CGI. And then, and even though he's not part of it now, I do think of Phil Lord and his, what's the other guy? Is it
Chris
Miller?
Miller, yeah.
Chris Miller, and how they got fired from that Star Wars film, and yeah, that but they're very independent directors as well. So so yeah, just a little bit of hypocritical commentary from Mr. Lucas there.
Yes, I mean that's not at all shocking, Aaron. Not at all.
Not at all shocking. He doesn't come off great, but he does come off as you know, the Empire Dreams. I mean, he had his passion, and you have to give him some credit for going against the grain of the American New Wave. That's one thing that the movie says. You know, it finally got away from all these grim, dark movies of the 70s. And I'm like, wait a minute. Those are some great movies.
That's the best part of the 70s.
Right. I'll take Chinatown over over Star Wars any day. And Chinatown's actually, like, the top of my head. There's so many better. Anyway, so that was the documentary I watched. I also watched The Family on Netflix, which I didn't like. Netflix is having some bad long-form documentaries lately. And that's the show.
Dun, 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 dun.
Let's shit on Netflix and call it a day. So where can people find you online, Jill?
You can find me on Twitter at Biscuit Kitten. Also The Retro Set, and a podcast that we have on the 25th Frame called DWT, Drinking While Talking, with my co-host Wade Sheeler.
Hello, Wade. And what about you, Matt?
I'm Matthew E.G. on Letterboxd, and I'm also the co-host of The Complete podcast, which is covering Kieślowski right now. You can find the show both on the 25th Frame website and on Twitter at The Complete Pod.
And I'm Aaron, and I mostly find me here. And the 20th Frame, support us. Please subscribe to the Master Feed to get all your great shows and this bad show right here. Yes.
Where we shit on Disney and Netflix, the two most powerful entertainment.
Yeah, if you're affiliated with Disney and Netflix, don't join the groups.
We are going to be struck by lightning.
Yeah. And if you really are complaining about Teal, forget about that as well.
Yeah, no, I don't want any Teal complainers in my immediate. So leave.
Yeah, get out of. And what's funny is you were doing that rant. I still had the picture of Betty Davis on my my screen, so I totally saw her delivering that worked.
You know, and I have been told I have very pronounced eyes, Aaron. You have been in my presence.
Yeah.
And I had a friend tell me that I have Betty Davis eyes, which think I have Marty Feldman eyes. I think that's more accurate.
You don't smoke. She's smoking a cigarette, giving me the glare.
No, I don't.
So I'm pretty intimidated right now.
I'm pretty sure I just have like probably a thyroid condition. What? I should probably get that checked out.
I'm sure you're just fine. All right. Well, thanks for joining, and that's the show.
Bye bye.